Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cohen.
And you are listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for people who do the fine art needle and thread thing. Seems like I stumbled the last time on that. Oh, well.
I don't know.
Most people edit it out, but, you know, that's realism. I'm leaving it right there.
Mm-hmm. Like, real. We're keeping it real here.
Yeah. So, okay, we have Fiber Talk going to be coming up at the Nashville show. The show coming up in March. And then at the end of May, I'll be at Sassy Jack's for the Bethia sampler class with Nicola Parkman from Hands Across the Sea Samplers. And then in August at the retreat, Arlene's retreat in New Jersey. So Fiber Talk on the road here. Pretty excited. Yeah.
Lots of cool opportunities to be talking with stitchers and designers and all kinds of folks there.
Yeah, I'll be doing at Nashville, going to do as many videos as I can, like I did last year. And then going to try and do at least one, if not two, live shows. We'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. But we'll be doing a lot of video tours of each of the exhibits, as many as I can get in, and put those up during and shortly after the show so people can see all the things that are new, because that show is a lot of new things at that show. So we'll be doing that. I gotta talk to Bendy. I guess she's going to be there. So we have to do a chat with Bendy.
That would be great. Now, in your experience going last year, I remember you, all the pieces you shared last year in all the ways, both while you were there and then in the shows afterwards, but what were you most taken with, or what were you surprised by? What are you looking forward to most this year? Like, what are your, now that you're going to be a second timer there, what can you say about it coming up?
I think I would say that I did not appreciate, for the first time, did not appreciate how many new things were introduced at that show. And as much as I went around and did as many videos as I could fit in, I'm going to do even more, because there's just an awful lot of new stuff at that show, new designs, and most people have multiple designs. Mm-hmm. And I just felt after the fact that I did not see as many as I could. And you'd think, all right, well, yeah, but you were there. Why didn't you go? Well, I was monkeying around sometimes doing videos and technical things to try and get videos ready. But I really think that I need to I'm going to streamline the technical things this year, you know, the videography things, so that I have less of that to deal with and more time. Because there's an awful lot that I missed. And people who are sharing, I have to watch for that. People who are sharing rooms with others, and I don't think I took full advantage of that. So the reason I knew is because I would hear after the fact, so and so would say, our new designs we introduced at Nashville, you were there?
Yeah.
How did I miss you? And so I'm going to have a better plan, but a lot of that is a first time at any show like that. You spend a lot of time just figuring out the lay of the land. Mm-hmm. And then once you get it, then the next year, I mean, to me, it's always the next year that you really take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And, we always used to talk about that when a friend of mine and I did a lot of photography. We'd go out, go to a new spot to photograph flowers or whatever. And we would go, and then we go back like two or three weeks later, because now we knew what we had to work with. We'd had a chance to process it. And then you go back, and that's when you really get the good photos. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like this year I'm going to be able to go and really take advantage of what's there. Because a lot of it was candy store stuff, kid in a candy store. Oh, look at this, and look at this, and look at this, and forget that I was there to do a job. So
now, had you last year, or will you this year, do a lot of checking up on the various sites of people who are posting previews and, you know, basically giving you the heads up of what to expect, or you want to go in sort of fresh and clean and be surprised?
Nope. I've already started doing that. Already started doing some homework, seeing who's, because you can go to Needlework Elite Retailer and there's a list of all the exhibitors. And so, yeah, no, I've already started doing the homework and people are starting to post what they're going to have and talk about it. And so, yeah, that's helping me plan better, just exactly what I'm going to do. So, yeah, it really is, I guess, as I talk this through, it really is second time around. Now I don't have to figure out what this is all about.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I know what it's all about. So now I can go in and tackle the real meat of the thing. So,
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yep. So looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. And then there's a couple of, was last year, a couple of people who do beautiful hand-turned wood ort bowls and needle holders and stuff. Got to spend a little more time with those guys. I didn't take full advantage of that. That's beautiful stuff. So, we'll plan to do a great deal there at this year. Yeah, looking forward to that.
Well, I will hope that weather does not cause any travel problems this year.
It would be nice. It would be nice. Yeah.
So all goes smoothly in that direction.
Yep. Yep. And then, well, and you know, and that's the kind of thing that when I'm at your retreat, I really am planning to do some things there, a show or two or some interviews or something to share with people what goes on at that retreat, because a lot of people just can't make those things. Well, number one, they sell out so fast, but number two, people just can't make it. So kind of share with them what goes on. And and speaking of not being able to make, I've mentioned a couple times, get on Arlene's, if you're interested in Arlene's retreat, get on the waiting list. You never know.
So. You never know. I have a waiting list. It's not huge and long, which is wonderful, just because, I mean, because talk about going through an experience a second time.
Yeah.
Going through the planning of a retreat for a second time. And so I know from last year, you know, life happens. Things come up. People had the need to back out. And I had a very long waiting list last year. And so sure, people towards the end of that waiting list had very little chance, or I was getting to them, you know, 3 weeks beforehand saying, I know this is not likely, but any chance you want to come. So I'm happy to take names, just to hold on. We're coming up close to almost the 6 month mark, which is still quite a distance away. So, I would be happy for anyone to email me at njflosstuberetreat@gmail.com. If you are interested, it is August 2nd through 4th in Woodbridge, New Jersey. It is 4 miles away or at the Hampton Inn, Woodbridge, which is 4 miles away from Needleworkers Delight, which is a large needlework store, which is to say there is lots of stash enhancement that goes on during the weekend. And that was certainly part of, you know, talk about, you know, when people are trying to figure out what goes on at a retreat. I know for myself, for the longest time, the idea of going somewhere, I mean, in effect, paying to go somewhere and sit and stitch for a weekend didn't quite connect with me. I came to realize over this last, you know, couple of years with FlossTube, with more and more connections within the needlework stitching community, the idea of being with other stitchers is a huge thing, that you're in an environment where you're with your people. And that is huge. Then to see what all those people are doing and to be inspired by it. And for some people, that inspiration means take out your wallet and go buy exactly what they've bought. and to be somewhere where you can actually do that, where you're not taking out your phone and purchasing it online, but where you're getting a ride over to the store and, you know, saying, I want exactly what she just bought yesterday, is a lot of fun. So that is, you know, that's just great when you can have a retreat that has a connection with some purchasing power, shall we say.
Yes, so, yes. So, yes, and that one, you got a really great rate, hotel rate.
Yes.
Especially for New Jersey, you got a really great hotel rate. Fly into Newark, and so it's rather compact. Fly into Newark, the hotel not too far from the airport, and the needlework store not too far from the hotel and or the airport. So, nice little compact thing there.
Yep.
So that's, it's in August. So yeah. I'll be there for that. Looking forward to that. It's going to be fun. Gossamer Lace. You finished it.
Yes, I did.
I have to say, now I know in person it would be even more stunning, but that is one beautiful piece of cloth when you got it all done. That is really nice.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So an interesting topic for anyone, no matter, you know, what your project, whether it's a cross stitch or a canvas work or black work or whatever you're stitching, is when you're working on a large piece that you have taken a long time. And that feeling of when you're coming close to the end and then you finish it off. And, you know, everyone goes through that. And I feel different when it comes to different projects. I mean, there's been some that there's a real, like, letdown, like, oh my gosh, you know, feeling of emptiness. And then there's others that, you know, I'll never say that I'm sick of a project, but a relief that it's finished.
yeah, there's that sometimes, yes.
and maybe it was just because I was trying really hard to get it done. Like, I knew when I wanted to film that floss tube on that particular day. And I realized, like, earlier in the week, like, you know what? I think I could get it done by the time I need to do that floss. You know, there was a little bit of, like, setting that goal, and I just needed to make the goal happen. And so there it was. I got it done.
Yeah.
And then getting it, then when I could finally get it off, so I used my scroll frame. And so to get it off the scroll frame and really see the full thing, for the first time. I mean, that's always an exciting thing when you're doing a piece that's so large that you don't really see it because it's partially rolled up for the majority of the time that you're working. It's just, you know, and it is something that I have just loved, that blue fabric was just the right thing. You know, it's just the right, it just works, you know.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Gossamer Lace is one of Arlene's designs. And I'll put a picture on the page for this podcast, but I used a blue fabric and then all 5200, is it?
Yep, the bright white.
Yeah, all bright white, and it's a 18-inch diameter circle of a lace design that is on that blue linen is really striking. And I was thinking about that, not only do I like it a lot. I mean, I have all along. It's been so much fun to follow it because it's so beautiful. But if you look at it in relative terms, not an expensive piece at all. Very striking, very impressive. But you got five skeins of DMC floss and a piece of cloth.
Yep.
And that's it.
That's it. Now,
it really is striking for no money, really, in relative terms.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is, to me, the beauty of a lot of needlework that is done on, I was about to go down a path and realize I take it back now. I was about to say a lot of needlework that is done on like linen fabric, but then you can go into the department like silk threads and need 25 colors of them. And no, I take that back. You can get very expensive in that way. So yes, this was a piece that, a long time ago, I used to find the need to do this. I don't need to do this that much anymore, but to sort of quote, justify a purchase of something. If you, take the cost of, let's just say, going to a movie, which I don't do that often, if really, but how much you spend for a couple of hours of activity, you know, whether it's going to a movie or going to an event or something like that, or how much you spend for a concert ticket or something like that. And then you take the number of hours that you spend on a needlework project and you divide that by how much money you've put into it. Even when you've bought 25 skeins of silk, you know, and an expensive piece of linen. All right, if it's 25 skeins of silk, it's probably a big piece, okay? And you're probably going to spend quite some number of hours on that big piece. Cost per hour, you could totally justify those 25 skeins of silk, you know?
Right.
There's a way that, you know, I've always sort of tucked in the back of my mind when it comes to, especially when it comes to like making a decision about a big project. I don't know if I was doing some small little project, would I necessarily choose the most expensive silk and the most expensive? I don't know. But a big project, if there was a reason to do that one in silk threads, I would have, but there wasn't, you know? And I also did want to just talk briefly, because I had gotten some questions about this, some people who are interested in purchasing the pattern and in sort of the little bit of nervous realm. And I realized I should clarify. So when you talk about black work, there is a notion or an idea that all black work is reversible, meaning if you looked on one side of the back side of the fabric, it would look identical to the front. And that is not true. There are some blackwork patterns that are intended to be completely reversible. And the history of blackwork, you go back centuries, and you have, I want to say Queen Isabella of Spain, but I may not have the right queen or the right country, but where the origins, and you see it on cuffs and collars, and certainly on articles of clothing like that, it was intended to be reversible because you would see like both sides of the fabric on a cuff or something. But as black work is done nowadays, especially if it's something you're framing, there's no need for it to be reversible. And so if you need to cross over a space to get from one hole to another, you just do it. So just to be super clear, that gossamer lace piece in black work is not a reversible piece. I mean, it's not like the back is a super mess or anything, but it's in no way intended to be a design that you could or should bother spending the effort to figure out, okay, how do I do this path so that I can return perfectly and it looks the same on both sides? I mean, there's no reason to try and do that for a piece that you're going to frame. So just, you know, keep that in mind when if there's someone out there kind of looking into black work and learning about that style of needlework, if you've never done it before, there's some websites, there's some good places to look. There are some instructions on how to do reversible black work in terms of looking at a design and trying to figure out a path to take. So you're going one direction and then reversing it. But a large piece like that, I couldn't even imagine what it would take to kind of make it completely reversible. So just to be clear, gossamer lace, not reversible. The back, the back has some threads all over the place.
We won't be seeing the backside of that.
I don't mind sharing. I know there's some people, actually recently I've seen some Instagram posts of show me your backside kind of stuff. And I don't mind showing the backside of it. I just want to, and maybe I actually should specifically to say, this is not black work that is intended to be reversible. Just to be clear, don't think that, you know, just to clarify the notion of what black work is and isn't.
And maybe that is worth an educational moment, because I think black work carries that little piece of baggage in many circles.
Yeah.
That expectation, because you look at it and say, oh, that looks really quite simple. I could do that. And then that piece of baggage gets slapped onto it and you go, well, maybe not so much, but no, stitch the thing so the front looks good and looks like it's supposed to. As long as you don't have a bunch of knots on the back that are going to cause bumps, who cares what the back looks like?
Exactly.
Yeah. Cause black work, I think is one of the more fascinating aspects of needlework. When you look at, what people do with just thread thickness and shading by just making stitches closer together and further apart, And it's just amazing. And, you know, it's literally one of those things, one of those stitching things where you don't have to spend a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And you can get some very, very beautiful pieces and have a lot of fun stitching. And, yeah, you don't have to have 15 colors of silk thread. Just, you know, like in your case, five skeins of DMC at, what, 60, 50, 60 cents a piece. Well, you probably only paid a dime because you got 3,000 Joann's coupons. But
you can't get it as low as a dime. Let's just
no.
Quickly, but no.
Oh, you could, Arlene. I have great faith that you could at Joann's.
Nope. That's the days of there. I can remember, like, as a kid, there was, like, I want to say there were times where they were 10 for 10, but that's forever and ever ago. So no, not that cheap.
Okay.
But anyway, a few bucks of has been put in towards the thread and not much more than that.
Yeah. Anyway. But that's just, you know, I think blackwork has that real, real advantage. Mm-hmm. And you can have some beautiful pieces and have a nice new challenge. Because it does present a different challenge than, say, cross stitch or needlepoint, and a lot of fun, and I think in blackwork you've mentioned that with the gossamer lace thing, that you don't have to do the whole thing; you can take parts.
Absolutely.
Like the center of that one would make a beautiful piece, much more manageable size wise, and a beautiful piece just to take that center section out and do that. And, a lot of black work, pieces, I think you can just take portions and make a nice design out of. So, yeah. So anyway, yeah. Congratulations. That's, that one, your design and your selling design and all of that, but just from a pure stitcher perspective, a really beautiful piece. And you must have been really pleased when that last stitch got tied down.
Yeah.
Because that's very nice. Yep. Okay. And now, when Arlene's on these Wednesday shows, they're not going to be all about Arlene's designs. But but she did come out with some new designs. And so go watch her floss tube to see all of them. Put up here a few days ago, Saturday, Friday?
Friday night, I got the video up there. Yes. This past Friday night. And I have been trying the last number of months and to get new designs and kind of would work a little bit of piecemeal, but finally got to the point where I needed to kind of set a goal and get some new pieces out there. And, you know, it's interesting in that process, there is a few ideas that didn't come to fruition, but I'm now going back to kind of revisit them and see what will come to fruition for the next time around.
Yeah.
And I got one of the, more than one person has more or less commented on exactly what I think is true. And it's true for me as a stitcher, as well as a designer, that I run the gamut of variety. You know, there's flowers, there's lace, there's skeletons, there's a little bit of everything. And that's true. And if you were to, you know, look around my home and see the stitch pieces that I've done over the course of the years, I don't just stick to one type or one
right
genre, I guess you would say.
You're all over the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I think that's fun. And you have designs that or you use techniques that take advantage of the designs or vice versa, or however that works. But I think that's what's fun about a lot of your stuff is it's not the same old stuff all the time. You're all over the place, but it's nice. Like this most recent collection is just a real nice variety of things that I think most people could find something in that. So go watch Arlene Cohen. Just look up Arlene Cohen on FlossTube or on YouTube, and she comes right up there. It's the only one. So go do that and watch her video, and you get to see all the things. But you have introduced me to a new world, and one of your designs, The Death of Susanna Jane, which is a tombstone design.
Uh-huh.
But you've introduced me to an area of stitching that I did not know about.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew there were a lot of people who really enjoyed stitching skeletons and, the Halloween stuff. And then you said in your video about dark stitching. And so, but this is a, so I learned from you, this is a thing. This, that wasn't a word or a phrase you made up. No. This is a thing, this dark stitching. I did not know about this.
Yeah. And I will, in so many ways, I give credit to FlossTube for teaching me so much. Because before getting involved with FlossTube, you know, I was very much in my own little stitching world. And, you know, I stitched what I liked and what appealed to me. And what I appreciate from FlossTube is how much I learn about other stitchers and what they like and what appeals to them. And that doesn't have to be the things that I like. It just means I'm learning more and I like to learn more in the world. And one of the phrases that I started to hear more and more was the idea of dark stitching. And there's Dark 13, where a lot of stitchers, it's a hashtag, and a lot of stitchers on the 13th of each month will particularly take out a piece that might have, it might be referring to a death, it might be referring, it might have skeletons on it, it might be a Halloween piece, it might be anything in that genre. It was honoring an anniversary of, it was referring to the Salem witch trials, and whatever month that was, there was some anniversary that was coming up. And so a number of people last year were doing various stitching related to the Salem witch trials, not in a Halloween sense by any means, but truly honoring those that were hung, being accused of witches. And so there was a lot of dark stitching that were done, you know, in the spirit of witches, and I'm not talking Halloween witches there. So you see a lot of patterns from that sense. And again, that wasn't something that I was so familiar with in my time before watching FlossTube and discovering that there's a lot of people that appeals to. And, you know, it's been in the back of my mind. One of my first patterns, literally in my first, when I opened my Etsy store and started designing, involved a skeleton. It's called the Skeleton Mosaic, and it's based off of an actual mosaic found in, an Antioch, an archaeological dig. And I don't remember, it might be in current Turkey, but don't quote me on the country. And they uncovered a mosaic from, you know, centuries ago, and it had a skeleton on it. It was not your typical ancient mosaic. And so I took that mosaic and turned it into a cross stitch pattern. And I know that had appealed to, you know, that was the first of my designs that had that went toward that dark stitching piece. And so it's been in my mind to kind of always be on the lookout for something that might appeal to those who like that. And I've had a few other thoughts. There's one that involves a devil kind of thinking, and it hasn't come to fruition yet, but it's always in the back of my mind. It might one of these days that I'll come back and refer to this fiber talk. So when this gravestone idea I showed in my FlossTube, this idea came from back in October. I'm at the library. I speak how much I love libraries. And they had, as many libraries do, a display the display was themed for Halloween, but it was not just cheesy kid book Halloween. And there was a book on, it was called Death, A Graveside Companion. And it was a lot of like artwork and through the centuries, all kinds of things, a lot of skeletons, a lot of things. And in there was a whole section about gravestones and symbolism. And that's what got me going in looking at, I believe some of the dark stitching patterns that I've seen out there are based on gravestones. Where could I go with this? What could I find? And that's what led me to Susanna Jane. And, you know, one piece that came from it, like in my mind for quite some time as I was developing that, I referred to that pattern as Susanna Jane. And then when it came to naming it, I was realized, you know, I don't really want to just name it Susanna Jane, because that's like the model that samplers are named. They're They're often just named by the names of the girl who stitched it. And this is just almost the opposite. You know, a sampler with a name of a girl is like honoring a life, what a girl did in her life. And this is just the opposite of that. This is honoring a woman at her death.
Right.
So that's why I added a few more words to the title so that it could be a little bit clearer. You find that pattern. It is not a sampler of that Susanna Jane stitched in her lifetime. It is basically the opposite of that, but it is a reproduction of what her gravestone looks like. She was buried in Massachusetts in August, died and was buried in August of 1776. So we're talking a month after the Declaration of Independence was signed. So, you know, just to put it in perspective time-wise, but there is an incredible amount of symbolism on her gravestone and the words and the poetry that's a part of that. And it just sort of, it rung all the bells. And I was like, I think I need to do this, but I'm also going to give a shout out and a lot of credit to, as I have evolved as a designer, and this is one of the reasons I love listening to your fiber talks, Gary, and when you're interviewing designers, it is so, I learn so much because I love listening to how other designers, you know, in effect get their ideas, but their process and everything. And for me, the bouncing of ideas off of others for this particular design has meant the world. You know, it was, I know that the end result was a better pattern because I was bouncing ideas off of people who like that type of stitching. That made a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a different world. And it really, I mean, I get tidbits of it when, especially around Halloween, but I did not realize it was an ongoing thing for some people. And it just once again speaks to how versatile and vast needlework is.
Absolutely.
I mean, people say, "Oh, I'm bored," or "I've lost my enthusiasm," and there's just so many other ways you can go to rekindle that.
Absolutely.
To find a new channel of interest, mm-hmm. and you know, and this is one I did not know about the. That this was an ongoing thing. And, you know, the 13th, when you mentioned that was really, people do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just, and that's fun. That's part of it. That's part of what, if that interests you, you do it. I mean, people do gravestone rubbings all the time. And how is it this much different from that? Every time I turn around, there's something new to do and or learn in this hobby, and it really makes it fun.
There, I can think of one floss tuber, and there might be more than just one, who for the month of October, I mean, sort of her own version of Stitch Mania, she was starting a new project every day. So 31 projects in the month of October, and they were all, I mean, they would all fall under this category. They were all either Halloween, witches, devils, skeletons, they are all in this theme. And it's not to say that all of her stitching is this way. I mean, like if you were to look at her entire collection of stitching, I'm pretty sure she's got some Hands Across the Sea samplers, and she's got some flowers, and she's got some other stuff. But clearly there is a lot of appeal of dark stitching if she was going to start 31 projects.
Yeah, that would constitute appeal, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
So, no, it's just fun, and it gives you it's another example of diversion.
Yeah.
You know, I like doing this and I do it 70% of the time, and then the other 30% I go and do some dark stitching. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Fun for you. Yep. Yeah, enjoy that. So there it is. The Death of Susanna Jane is one of Arlene's new ones. So, yeah. And as we mentioned last time you were on, you are now distributed through Hoffman. And so people can go to their local needlework store and get your designs.
Absolutely. So the patterns are still available. I'm still selling through my Etsy store, but also, through Hoffman. So options on how to get my patterns, which is great. And
yep.
I've really appreciated those who have contacted me and just shared that, you know, they're because of Hoffman and the way they put out the word, local needlework stores are featuring me or my patterns on their websites or in their newsletters. And that's just been a lot of fun to hear about, which is, you know, for a new designer who's, you know, just, you know, breaking into this world in a bigger way. It's just been a lot of fun to know about those kinds of things.
Yep. So I was wondering when you were showing the gossamer lace thing, and then, actually I was watching I was stitching and watching that particular video. And I was thinking about, and what got this going in my head was, and we're talking about streamlining and speeding up stitching. And I have such limited time, you know, maybe an hour and a half or so in the evenings, and some weekends I get chunks and then other times I get nothing. And so I've been thinking hard about ways I can make the stitching go faster. And not that I'm driving myself to finish things, because I really just don't care. I just enjoy the process, but ways to make it go faster. And I had mentioned about a tip I'd gotten from somebody about if you're using, say, one color, thread up a bunch of needles in that one color, and then you can, you don't have to pull off a length of thread when you're ready to change needles. You just grab another needle and keep going. And it, yeah, we're talking about minuscule amounts of time, but it does keep the momentum going. And then, you know, I have this procedure where I always start a new thread before I quit
yes.
a session. And last night I sat down to stitch, and it was just, it just hit me just right. I just sat down. I took the cloth over the project I'm working on, picked up the needle and just started stitching. I knew right where I was at. The needle was right there. I just went at it and, had almost a full length of thread. And so I was off and running, and there was no delay. There was no prep work, nothing. And it was just, yeah, this is great. Now I'm underway here. And, so that pays off for me. So I just was wondering if you had any things you do that make the stitching go faster, or maybe you don't think about it. I don't know.
You know, in general, the answer is in general, no. Although I did have an interesting thing that just happened last night for me. I am in a little bit of a transition period of stitching. Since I finished Gossamer Lace, I'm not started on a big project quite yet, but I will be soon. And so I'm just kind of doing a few smaller things and models of stuff. And so I started this model a couple nights ago, a small thing that I was just going to do in a hoop. And most of the time when I'm doing something in a hoop like that, I'm fine with holding the hoop in my hand or sort of propping my arm on a sofa cushion. And like, I don't even bother with my stand is where I'm going with this. And two nights ago when I was stitching, I don't know, I just wasn't enjoying it. And I was like, this is a chore. And last night I was getting ready to, you know, settle in for the stitching. And I was like, what's the problem here? What's the problem here? I want to stitch this. I want to get this done. This is not going to take that long. And I decided to put that hoop on my stand. Now I have a stand that has like a one clamp that clamps on the side. I can do that. I can get a hoop clamped in. And oh my God, was the stitching so much better. Just to go back to my traditional, I don't have to hold anything. I wasn't even two-handed stitching. I really was just still, you know, pulling from one hand and putting that same hand underneath. I mean, I wasn't taking advantage of the fact that the hoop was clamped. The other hand was just kind of hanging out. But it just felt so much better that I was back to my traditional not having to hold on to something. And it was just a moment to remind myself that when something doesn't feel right when you're stitching, like pause and figure out what's not right about it and adjust. And, you know, whether that's like physically how you're sitting or something like that, that was, you know, that just happened to come up for me last night that, or, you know, as I was getting ready to sit down last night, that the reason I was not looking forward to it was because I just didn't want to hold the hoop. Because frankly, most of the stitching I've been doing for the last, 5 months, I was not holding anything. I was using my scroll frame clamped in the stand. So, to take that moment to kind of think about how you're getting yourself ready. I feel like I'm always thinking two or three projects ahead, and yes, I want to get this one done so I can get started on the next one. How can I go faster? I don't have any magic solutions for you, Gary. I wish I did. Other than to win the lottery and not have to work a day job and stitch all day. I don't know how realistic that one is, but I'll go buy some lottery tickets. I don't know if that's going to do anything for you, but,
Well, that's the only way you're going to win the lottery. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Have to buy the tickets.
You actually have to be in it to win it. Yeah. Right. Now, I'm just looking for what are the things, because I have an ideal setup where I can, I sit in a chair and I don't have to get anything out. And someone had mentioned about that. Maybe that was, I think it's Jessica Grimm mentioned that in Sunday's show, mm-hmm. that to have a setup, if at all possible, where you don't have to spend 15 minutes getting stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, that's ideal. Now, a lot of people can't do that. A lot of people have, they stitch in a chair in the living room and they have a basket and everything has to go away or the cat will get it and haul it all over the house or the dog will chew everything. So some people can't do that. But that's a real plus to have all that laid out. And I have a table and a stand. And if I keep the table semi-clean, I actually have working space. And that is a huge help. I can just sit down and go. And right now I'm working on the Linen and Threads mystery sampler. Oh. And so I'm just doing it from stash. So I have variations of gray thread. And so I just have those all in a small container and put a cloth over it to keep the dust off. Mm-hmm. And so I can just sit down and go, and all the threads sitting there, everything's ready to go. And I think that's, then I don't spend 10 minutes or so getting things organized. Mm-hmm. And of course, some people are sitting there going, boy, I wish I had that. And yeah, I know it's not always possible. And part of the reason I have it is we don't have any kids at home, and it's just Margaret and I in a house. So I have that advantage of having the space, but it does speed things along. It does get you going to the actual stitching first.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the keys is what can you do that gets you going right out of the gate so that you're the part that we all enjoy, which is the stitching, is actually happening now. Mm-hmm. And then, there are other times for prep work, but when the prep work is coming, and getting the threads together and preparing the cloth and all those things, and you set aside time for that. But when you're stitching, you just want to go. And all right, you're no help.
I'm like that too. I'm lucky enough that I can keep my stitching out and ready to go. I do the same thing you do, which is to make sure I leave when I'm shutting down for the night. I leave a thread ready to go so that when I go to pick it up the next time, it's all ready to go. It's just all I can say is find more hours of your life. But in most cases, that's just not possible.
Yeah, that is. I am intensely jealous of those who can get up in the morning and a day ahead of them. That'd be really nice, but nope, not an option for me. And sometimes it's, do I stitch and try and stay awake knowing I'll make a mistake and have to tear it out, or do I just forget it? And sometimes it's smart to just forget it. So I did that the other night too. I was tired and I'm doing that sampler, that linen and threads thing on 40 count. And I started stitching and got a chunk done and go, all right, progress. Came back the next day. You know what happened.
Yep, all the progress came out.
You bet it did. You bet it did. It was an error and it was too obvious. And yep, all of it came back out. Do it again. Yeah. So don't stitch when you're tired. Not smart. So, yep. All right. Well, thanks for nothing on that, Arlene. That's fantastic.
Well, I try.
All right. We need to wrap this thing up. Let's see. Oh, yes. Sunday, Jessica Grimm is the guest Sunday. Now, Jessica, it's been a year and a half since she was our guest. Number 44, and this will be the 103rd guest Sunday. So She was number 44. Jessica is a designer teacher who lives in Bavaria outside of Munich, and had her back because she's gone through quite a change since we last talked to her, moving away from and trying to define herself and structure her needlework as an artist. And it's an interesting conversation. I've been wanting to get to her and finally had a chance to do it, to talk about that. What is a needlework artist? What is she doing with that as her definition of who she is? And so we had a great conversation of that. And then also she taught, went to China. She was invited to go to China and teach.
Wow.
Yeah. And, it sounds like she had a tremendous time. Well, I know she did. And so she talks about that and several other things. But it's just interesting to hear what she's doing and how she's redefining herself and the work, the design work, and how she presents herself to the rest of the world. So it's just really interesting. And plus, on top of that, she's very talented and a terrific lady. So. So that's Sunday, Jessica Grimm, and that's it. Thanks, Arlene.
Well, thank you. Always a pleasure to chat with you, Gary.
A great time. All right. And then we'll be back next Wednesday is going to be Vanna. Vanna joins us next Wednesday. So we'll look forward to that. All right. Thanks for listening.
Take care.